Welcome to And for Other Things. I'm Andy Aplikowski. Today is February 19th, 2008. Don't forget you can always find any links or any other information for what we're talking about on today's episode on andforotherthings.com. Today's a very unfortunate episode that I was hoping not to have to get into. We're going to be talking about the Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School shooting in Broward County, Florida on February 14th, 2018. My heart aches for the victims of this and other shootings, and I can't imagine the horror of waiting to find out if you will ever get to hug your child again. But I do think we lose sight of the bigger picture when we're able to see the singular screen captures of the lines of parents and police and personnel surrounding these schools waiting, hoping that it's over. I think this carnage and mayhem happening across the country on a daily basis, there's a lot of it that's largely ignored because of these big high-profile situations. And it's bad business and bad for local politics to talk about the murder rates and shootings that are happening at exponential rates across the country, in cities across the country. And they're more deadly than these school shootings. As tragic as these have been, we have a real problem of violence in our country that we're using these big high-profile events to try to pass laws that many people, myself including, don't think we're actually going to stop the next one, while we're ignoring what else is going on and, quite frankly, what is leading to the just damaged psychosis of young kids to think that murder and violence against other people is okay and to be tolerated. Take the city of Chicago, for instance. It's everybody's whipping boy, but it's very easy to point this out. There have been approximately 56 people shot or killed in the city so far this year. The city is so ripe with violence, and youth are not just caught up as innocent bystanders. They are often the central players. I remembered a story back in 2009 where a student, Darian Elbert, who was an honor student at the Christian Fenger Academy High School, he was beaten to death by four teenagers. And there was cell phone video of this at the time. And it just mob violence. Just, it was amazing to see this happening on the streets of America by kids, no less. And that's where I just hope everyone doesn't fall prey towards forgetting about everything, that our kids are growing up in a society where this is okay. So why do I bring this up? I think we're doing a great disservice to our kids by ignoring what we've allowed to happen to their childhoods. I was an undocumented stepdad from about 2006 to 2013. And by that, I mean I dated someone who had a kid who was in middle school till about high school, midway through high school when we broke up. And I got to see how much the life of kids has changed from when I went through it 20 to 30 years before that. And it was shocking. These kids nowadays go through things and have to deal with things I didn't see until college or after. And whether it be sex, drugs, violence, you know, what are the things that I was aware of in high school are now in the middle schools. And it's scary with the way technology has allowed this to happen. And again, I think if we ignore the gore and sensationalism that kids are exposed to by whether it's TV, the internet, movies, reality TV is designed to be so overdramatic and create conflict and anger between contestants, or should we call them victims of the ratings and money palooza that is the clickbait world we now live in? And I feel the dialogue that is coming out of this Parkland shooting is people are trying to say this is going to prevent the next school shooting, and I just don't think it is. I think some of there's plenty of room for talking about ways to reform how people can legally possess or purchase a firearm, but I think we're ignoring huge parts of our society and our governmental system that have also clearly fallen through on mass murders, but also just the one-on-one daily danger of literally there are certain parts of cities that you can't walk in at night or even during the day. I mean, if we're really going to try to get to the bottom of senseless acts of violence in our country, let's not ignore the ones that happen every single day. Now, I've tried to assemble some of the real basics of this story in Parkland because I think it's important, and I think we can maybe start to talk about what we can do to try to begin to get our A. We don't understand why some of these happen. In many cases, the suspect takes their own life or is killed by law enforcement, so we don't get a chance to talk to them and ask them why. This is a unique situation. We have that opportunity, but we have 17 killed, including students and faculty. Another 15 were injured. The suspect is 19-year-old Nicholas Jacob Cruz, but he was no child like many people are portraying him in the media. He was 19 years old. He was an adult. He was adopted at birth. His adopted father died early in his life. His adoptive mother passed away at 68 years old late last year. He had been living with family and friends since. According to the Florida Sun Sentinel, the weapon used was a Smith & Wesson M&P 15 rifle. And I've linked to the story that says that also has some other information thing on there. But I've also linked to the Smith & Wesson manufacturer website. I pulled up a page, and this is important, where they make what is known in the firearms industry as California compliant firearms, where the assault weapons ban, portions of that, while it was eliminated nationwide, some states have enacted certain things, California being one of them, where they still have the magazine capacity and the pistol grip, were two of the ones. And it just visually, you can, if you go to this website and look at some of the pictures that are on there, of these modern sporting rifles, or what people call AR-15s, there is a visual difference to them that you can do that is actually going to get around the law. So the weapon still functions largely the same, but looks different to pass the muster of the federal or the assault weapons ban, as they were. A couple of the well-known gun rights activists in Minnesota testified at the state legislature several years ago about taking a, I believe it was a Ruger 10/22, which is a 22 caliber. Think of it as a plinking rifle or something you would maybe hunt rabbits with, or just go to the gun range, and it's just a fun little thing, cheap to shoot, doesn't have a loud bang or anything like that. And with some very inexpensive modifications, bolt-ons, you can make it look exactly like an AR-15. Shoots the same weapon, shoots the same round, same capacities and all that stuff. So the laws that are being talked about aren't actually going to stop the device from being able to do certain things. So that's where some of the, that's why you see so many people on the right pushing back, or the gun rights people pushing back on these, because it actually won't stop them. Fully automatic weapons are nearly impossible to get in the United States, but we saw the shooter in Las Vegas use bump stocks. You can also do that with a rubber band or your belt loop if you practice a little bit. So the law, passing a law isn't going to stop someone who is intent on doing it. Just like anyone can build a bomb if they know what to do. Or in the event, we've seen situations, we've had people that whether it be stabbing or renting a Home Depot truck and driving it down a walking path or a jogging path in New York. People intent on mayhem, in many cases, were likely denied purchasing a firearm for, or didn't even pursue it because they knew the laws would stop them, but they still found a way to hurt and harm people. So I think it's important to not just get bogged down on stopping gun sales or banning the AR-15 as a way to stop these mass violent murder sprees that are taking place across the country, and sadly are becoming more commonplace. Even though the weapons have been here for hundreds of years, it's only of late that we're seeing this problem. And I think maybe it's not the gun's fault, and that's just simply the tool. If you take a loaded firearm and set it on a sidewalk, and no one pulls the trigger, it's not going to fire. Someone has to pull the trigger. One of the things I haven't shared with publicly is I've actually had a threat on my life. Received a phone call from a hospital in the state of Minnesota alerting me to the fact that someone was currently detained there and had made a credible threat against me. Gave me some specifics on what that was, and luckily the individual had told someone they had some things, feelings, and urges that they didn't like and sought help for that. You know, that's the type of situation. There's a, in the state of Minnesota, there's a protocol for this type of, didn't know of it ahead of time, know about it now, that there's a situation or protocols for this situation where, you know, what if at that point that person, you know, that reported, alerted me could alert the NICS, the federal database of also putting a delay process in there where that someone couldn't go buy a firearm. The mayor of Broward, Mayor Michael Buer, said that Cruz was in mental health treatment until 14 months ago when he stopped going. Now, I'm going to go through the federal form that you have to fill out when you purchase a firearm, and a couple of things on there that I think can either prevent these things or with some slight tweaks can accomplish what a lot of people are asking for. But one of them is, if you are currently undergoing mental treatment, you are supposed to be prohibited from purchasing a firearm, with a few exceptions. So I think this demand for, we've got to do something, or you're complicit and blood on your hands, that we're seeing very carefully pushed out there by the Bloomberg, the gun control groups out there, who, don't be fooled, are well-funded and probably have more power and influence than the NRA ever will or could imagine having. You know, again, if we go through this recent case in Florida, the suspect, there were clear signs that he was a troubled young man in serious need of help. And there were, the FBI admitted they received reports of his intentions and did not follow protocol. The FBI could have prevented this had they done their job. Local law enforcement also reported dozens of calls to deal with complaints on the subject recently and in the last few months. And there is a misnomer, I believe, intentionally from these gun control groups, that these background checks are not universal. Now, I have gone through the process to purchase several firearms over the years, and I filled out the ATF Form 4473 every single time. Now, every weapon I purchase has been at a store, a brand new at a store, so I can't say that there aren't ways to avoid filling out this form, but we've had situations where several of the recent shootings were legally purchased firearms, and instances were missed that could have prevented this. And the Florida shooting, the mental illness side of things, the Texas church shooting, that person was dishonorably discharged from the military. That's something that should be updated in that database. The military should have reported it to the NICSU or NICSI background database, FBI database, so that shooter wouldn't have been able to purchase that weapon. Nicholas Cruz shouldn't have been able to purchase that weapon. There were laws, there is a process in place already, but government failed to do the job that we follow the laws that we passed. So that's where I really urge caution in this, and it's so easy when something bad happens to say we've got to do something, we've got to do anything, but it's just like global warming. For 40 years, we've been talking about the same solutions to global warming, global cooling, climate change. They keep changing the name, but they don't keep changing what they want to do. The controls have been the same. We're seeing the same thing in regards to firearms. And that's why you see some of us push back so vehemently on this, is because they're using a situation, a terrible situation, a tragedy, something we never want to see happen again, to pass laws and changes that aren't going to likely stop what was causing this. You know, what was inside that person's head that was pulling that trigger? You know, there are hundreds of millions of firearms across the country and millions of firearms owners. Most of us have never and will never point our firearm at anyone. So that's why you see this danger. And you know, I'd like to go through the background check form that you have to fill out when you purchase a firearm and point out some of the things that are there that are in place that could prevent people, dangerous people, from getting these firearms. And then also maybe a po possibly a couple of tweaks to either the form or the system so that we can put this side of it to bed and then start focusing on the bigger societal problems that I also want to talk about. So again, this is the ATF, Department of Justice, Bureau of Alcohol and Tobacco and Firearms and Explosives, Firearms Transaction Record. And I'm going to post a link to this. It's a PDF. It's a 6-page form. I'm not going to go through every single thing, but I do want to go through. So it starts out, you put your name, where you currently live, your place of birth, your height, weight, male, female. I'm sure we're going to have a debate about putting about 13, 14 different check boxes in there for to make some people happy. Your birth date, your social security number. Question 11, and there's several parts to it. This is where we really get into the heart of how this form could have prevented things and maybe some ways we can tweak the system to make it even better. So these are yes or no questions, and if you answer the wrong way, your form, basically the person at the store where you're purchasing this firearm, they basically, most of them won't even proceed with calling the background check and will cancel the sale. So question 11B, are you under indictment or information in any court or felony or any other crime for which the judge could imprison you for more than 1 year? And then it says, see instructions for question 11B. Pardon me as I flip through to that. A lot of very fine print. Again, this is a 6-page form, 2 pages of information fill out, 4 pages of other information. So on 11B, this goes into prohibits the shipment, transportation, receipt, possession in or affecting interstate commerce of a firearm by one who has been convicted of a felony in any federal, state, or local court, or any other crime punishable by imprisonment for a term exceeding 1 year, is a fugitive from justice, is an unlawful user of or addicted to marijuana or any depressant, stimulant, or narcotic drug, or any other controlled substance, has been adjudicated as a mental defective, or has been committed to a mental institution, has been discharged from the armed forces under dishonorable conditions, is subject to certain restraining orders, convicted of a misdemeanor crime of domestic violence under federal, state, or tribal law, has renounced his or her U.S. citizenship, is an alien illegally in the United States, or an alien admitted to the United States under a non-immigrant visa. Furthermore, Section 922, Part N, prohibits the shipment, transportation, or receipt in or affecting interstate commerce by a firearm by one who is under indictment or information for a felony in any federal, state, or local court, or any other crime punishable by imprisonment for the term exceeding 1 year. An information is a formal accusation of a crime verified by a prosecutor. And I think right there, that one question, if you think about it, that addresses many of the instances of mass shootings that we've had where discharge, mental illness, there's things there that identified some of the things, the common threads that we've seen, whether it be certain psychotropic drugs or dishonorable discharges, domestic violence. There have been signs and patterns that we've started to identify in these individuals and carrying out these things that with this form, we already identified that people with these conditions should not be able to purchase a firearm. So I think what's really important for us, if we really truly want to solve this problem and prevent further mass shootings, maybe we need to talk about reforming how someone's data, how we deal with this as a society. And it's not just about guns. I mean, again, in New York City, we had someone rent a Home Depot truck. Anyone, you walk in there, I think all you need is a driver's license and a credit card to rent a car. You know, you could go in, you rent that truck, you go in, you could go to a commercial rental place and rent a 5-ton dump truck that you only need a driver's license to drive, pick up a it, it, it's there's lots of ways to inflict mass damage, and it's not just firearms. But I'll walk it back and say, what if we as a society had a discussion about what are some ways that we can, quote unquote, flag people that we think shouldn't have firearms? What if in this case, the FBI, who didn't do their job but could have done their job, was able to take this threat that was reported to them from the suspect, Nicholas Cruz, and put a temporary hold in the NICSI background database so that when he did go to purchase this firearm, he would get I believe the term is deferment. Pardon me as I page through this again. I want to get this right just to make sure. The last part here. A delay. Sorry. The process of when you fill out this form, a clerk at the store of where you're trying to purchase the firearm calls into the database of the agency, and they read through the responses that you put down, give you all your physical and identifying characteristics, and they're asked a couple of other questions to verify some of those things, and depending whether you said yes or no, and it's a relatively quick thing. Depending on Cabela's or big stores have a computerized system that handles it, and then they call it in. Other places you physically fill out the form and then they call it in. And they're told proceed, deny, or cancel, basically. So what if the FBI was able to put in that system, oh, we're getting a report of a threat from this person. We have not been able to verify this yet, but we can maybe address this or flag this individual so that if they do try to purchase a gun. Now, the scary thing is it doesn't stop someone from already of having a weapon, and it also doesn't necessarily prevent someone whose parents have weapons, which we saw in the, I believe it was Sandy Hook, the middle school shooting. That was the person killed his parents and then went to the school. So it's not a one size fit all, but I think this is something we can talk about. Is there a way local law enforcement had visited the suspect in the Broward Parkland shooting 3 dozen times in the last year for various violent or threatening things? Maybe they should be able to do it. Or what if, licensed therapists and medical doctors who have, you know, this is the slippery slope, and this is where it's scary, of due process and what are your rights. And we also we're also trying to be very careful as a society of shunning people who might be suffering from mental illness from seeking help. But again, we have a situation where mental health seems to be one of the common denominators for these, of if we want to stop these things from happening, we need to have very uncomfortable things. Rather than saying we just got to do anything and screaming into a microphone, how about we, again, identify the problems, identify some solutions, and have an honest conversation about, are these things we want to pursue? So that's where I think some of the things we might want to consider talking about is, you know, identifying some of these behavioral things and how those things are out there. Now, it's a scary, slippery slope if we allow, you know, we've seen it in schools and even adults, and politicians themselves will say and do anything about their opponents or colleagues in order to undermine them. So it's a very scary thing. But if we can come up with some criteria where there is a professionally licensed, you know, doctor, law enforcement, FBI agencies that are out there, and they notice there is an individual with some very, very dangerous things, or there's online activity, which Mr. Cruz, or I'm not even calling him, the suspect in the Parkland shooting, was saying a lot of very threatening things online, bragging about what he wanted to become, a professional school shooter. And no one took those seriously enough. There wasn't a process in place to handle it. Now, Twitter and Facebook have got ways to report offensive things, and you can easily get your account shut down. And, you know, a lot of times it's fraudulent, not always. Free speech is a great example of sometimes things we don't like are protected by free speech. So it's a difficult situation. But what if our public safety agencies that we count on as a society are able to reform and adjust into what we need them to do to prevent people that shouldn't be able to buy guns from buying guns, and still allow for the rights and freedoms for the millions and millions and millions of us out there who have no ill will? We're peaceful, loving people who never want to harm another individual for as long as we live. Now, if there's no middle ground, which with some people there's not, we're at a standstill. But I think there is. I think there are people from the gun rights side of the aisle who are willing to have a conversation, as long as it's a real, true, honest conversation about fixing the problem, not just banning all guns. Is there a way to have members of public safety or public health departments or licensed individuals who may receive reports? So if someone calls the cops that they heard so-and-so was threatening to shoot up a school or beat up their girlfriend or something like that, that law enforcement agency or is able to put a hold into that system. And maybe in the next system, we can come up with a way where there's a 30-day delay process that would trigger something more of what the background checks that you have to go through to buy a handgun. Would go through it. And that's something I also want to bring up is in the state of Minnesota, we have a permit to carry where if you go in and you take a class where you learn about gun, the self-defense laws, you take a physical test where you prove you are capable of firing a firearm safely. And then you can apply with your county sheriff to get a permit to carry a handgun. Some places call this a concealed carry permit. In Minnesota, it is not that, and many people mistake that. You actually are allowed to open carry in the state of Minnesota. But a very common mistake most people make is that is only for handguns. It does not cover shotguns or rifles. It is just for a handgun. And I won't get into the legal definitions of all this stuff because, quite frankly, it's so technical. Most people, their eyes, only certain people do it. Anyways, moving past that, what if on the national NICS database system, when you go to fill out this form to purchase a firearm, transfer a firearm, there is a way that if someone has deemed you a possible threat or a possible danger, you can create a delay system where your local law enforcement, FBI, your doctor, if you are prescribed a certain type of drug, these psychotropic drugs that were out there, or severe signs of depression or potentially suicide, is there a way for individuals to tag someone in this database? It's not a flat out ban, but at that point, the background check ensues. Now, some people consider this to be the no fly, no buy, adding the terror watch list in there. But I think what I'm talking about is something different, not just the terror watch list, but a separate one that actually is more based on local law enforcement, domestic violence, school shooting threats, mental illness. There's something different that actually encapsulates a local law enforcement type investigation, not dealing with, the national defense areas and departments. Again, I'm proposing this, and this isn't the solution. It's an idea that people should talk about and getting people together to talk about this. But I think this is something that could have prevented these situations. Again, the mayor of Broward said that the suspect in the Parkland shooting had been in treatment for up until 14 months ago. And he dropped out. And once you turn 18, in many cases, they can't hold you without a court order. So it's treatment is sometimes voluntary. So that's where there's got to be something else out there. And it's a scary slope. Some people want to call for a public database of guns. Well, the worry about who has guns, the key is privacy is important. It's not just privacy, it's safety. Again, the Sandy Hook shooting, the parents had guns and the kid killed the parents and then took the guns. So if we have a database of people out there that knowingly have guns, people can go break. If even if they don't get they get denied on the permit and they can't legally purchase a firearm, they can go steal the firearms. Minnesota, we just hosted the Super Bowl. Rob Gronkowski from the New England Patriots played in that Super Bowl. While he was in Minnesota, someone broke into his house and stole a couple of safes with guns in them. So this is one of the dangers of it there. And now another thing, and this is where some of my fellow gun rights supporters or fellow supporters might get a little uneasy is one of the things in this case that was an outlier and is something that we should discuss is in the state of Florida, you only have to be 18 to buy a rifle or fire or some firearms. Now, some states, I think Minnesota is one of them, you can buy a shotgun at 18, but you have to be 21 to buy a rifle or handgun. In Florida, you can be 18 to buy a rifle. So that's why this 19-year-old. In the state of Minnesota, my understanding is the Parkland shooter would not have been able to buy the firearm. Now, it's one of these interesting situations of we see this every day, whether it be voting or other rights. People are trying to push the age of adulthood down under 18, whether pushing the drinking age down, certain things where it's maybe it's time for us as a society, especially since kids' education and development into fully functioning adults seems to be happening later. If you look at the campus culture that we're seeing of, quite frankly, kids acting like spoiled brats and screaming at the top of their lungs because someone says something they didn't like, maybe we have to have that discussion about what is the legal age to do adult-like things. But I think that is something that maybe, you know, I've heard some of the people saying it's again, you know, federal law allows people under 21 to do it. Well, the state law in this case, you know, there's the Florida state law is a little bit different. We've crossed over 30 minutes here, and I know I try to keep these down, but I think some of us are willing on the gun rights supporter. Some of us are willing to have conversations. I think in order for that to be a meaningful thing that comes to an actual a recipe for solutions and for actually getting to the point of we can maybe say that we're done with school shootings, we have to have an honest and respectful discussion. And God bless some of the victims from the shooting in Florida who have stepped up and been very vocal. People hate saying thoughts and prayers, so while it still means something to us, I saw them. I watched the ABC Sunday morning show, and they were on there, or a few of the individuals were on there. They had some of the tape of it, and you could tell they were reading their responses. So, I love the courage and passion to stand up and speak, but when I believe people behind those and people behind other pushbacks out there, the Brady campaign, Bloomberg's gun group, they are not fighting fair. In Minnesota, we have an individual who leads the gun control groups who does not use facts and honesty as part of their arguments. They work on emotion and fear and dishonesty in order to try to get what they want, which is gun control. And it does a disservice. It's from our side, some of us are willing to have that conversation of, is there a reasonable compromise? Is there a way that we can identify things that could prevent these situations? Are there improvements or reforms to the current systems that would have better been done? We've got clear signs in several recent incidences where government agencies fail to follow the laws that could have prevented multiple deaths. So that's where just screaming, we've got to do something, anything, is a disingenuous, emotional, knee-jerk reaction to a bad situation, a tragic situation. And we are never going to be able to solve some of these huge crippling problems we're facing as a society if we aren't honest about them. And if, based on the reality TV world we live in, where you say and do anything you have to get what you want, we're going to end up more and more divided. And again, some of us are willing to talk about things. Some of us are willing to do it. And I think that that potential of using that existing delayed process, maybe reforming it. I don't know the exact specifics. If it's just 3 days, could we turn that out to 30 days? The other big part of this, and this is where it gets really uncomfortable as a society, is when there are individuals who don't fit in, which this individual in Florida didn't appear to fit in, and it was ostracized and or bullied. We've seen those situations play out in other scenarios as well. We've got to learn how to be a compassionate society. And instead of the cliques where you just point and laugh and giggle, maybe we need to be that group that the courageous kids are the ones that go and talk to everybody and ask, hey, what's going on? I mean, I've heard some of the stories out there of individuals that have embraced people that were shunned or the outcasts. And I think that's, you know, is that part of the thing of teaching kids to not be so cruel? I mean, we live in a society now with social media. Kids are bullied into the point of committing suicide because they can't take it. So I think we have to have a discussion of looking at the whole big picture and not focusing in just on the guns, just on the tool. Because again, the tool can change. It can be a number of things. And I don't want to go into some of the different ways someone could create mass murder, but it can be done without a gun. And maybe the problem is we've allowed a system and a society and these micro communities in these schools to become factories for outcasts and people with big problems that are manifested into violence. Because, I mean, we used to freak out about Grand Theft Auto and other violent video, you know, first-person shooter video games, because it kind of gave people practice and desensitized them to the idea of looking down the sights of a gun and pulling the trigger. It's something most people can't fathom, but now we have video games that it makes it normal and it's lifelike and realistic the way things are getting. So we as a society, there's a lot of stuff going on that is different. People ask, well, why is it getting so much worse? I think that's one of them. You know, growing up, we've got more problems than just guns as a society. And that's where, for me, we have to begin to address everything if we're going to actually try to solve the problem. And in many cases, the genie might be out of the bottle and it might be too late, but by gosh, we can do some things. And I think we're going to wrap this up here. One of the other things I want to mention that I think has been brought up, and I think it's important, is we've made schools soft targets in some ways by gun-free zones, but we've also implemented some security situations. It might be time to look at what are some different ways to do it. Now, in the city of St. Paul, Minnesota here, they just removed law enforcement from schools. Some places have them permanently. And I think it's an interesting thing of identifying ways that we could prevent access, you know, is metal detectors, singular entrances. A lot of the places for politics and other things, we use a lot of schools, and it's mostly evenings and weekends. The times you have to go advanced scout a venue for a convention or a rally or something, you go during the school hours, and they're very controlled entrances, and it's very hard to get into the schools. And, you know, that's where some of these things are. You know, are there physical barriers as well as the, you know, security, you know, background checks? And it's so much to be done that if we really want to truly prevent this from ever happening again, you know, we have two choices. We can come up with a compromised set of laws and different procedures and practices and change the way some of the stuff is done. Or we can line the military up on the West Coast and have them march to the East searching and seizing every single gun they have that is out there. That's going into people's houses, taking and confiscating them all. Voluntary gun buybacks aren't going to do anything. You know, you can't just stop all gun sales going forward. That's it. There's too many guns out there now. So it's a very complicated thing that is very tough to truly come up with ideas that are really going to work. It's easy to make that emotional soundbite, a 30-second news spot of a brave young kid full of emotion and passion who has just gone through an unspeakable tragedy. And you look at them and you say, my gosh, whatever we can do to help them get over this and prevent another kid from going through that. That's very hard to combat, if you will, politically. But it's not going to solve the problem of just doing some feel-good emotional things. If we truly want to address this, let's truly address this. Let's have a grown-up conversation of identifying causes, actions, and solutions and work towards that. But if it's two polar opposite sides saying all or nothing, it ain't going to happen. It's going to continue to divide us. And that's where I think, you know, we owe it to the kids two things: to honestly address the situation of firearms purchases and seeing if there is something we can do. I've proposed a few things very forthrightly and honestly in this. The second is we have to have a discussion about what we're allowing to happen to our kids. Society is changing faster and decaying, in my opinion, to change the kids so that when they do become young adults, that they can do these unspeakable things. It's disgusting how we treat each other. And all right, I'm sure I'm, like many, of opining on this situation, this tragic situation, and my heart does go out. My thoughts and prayers are with all of the victims of this and other tragedies. And I pray for our society to have the courage to step up and say, we've got a serious problem. It's not just guns, it's society and the hatred and envy and loneliness that is festering in some people's heads to want them to convince them to do these horrible, unspeakable things. And we as a society need to help identify, treat, and it's the only way we're going to be a safe society, avoiding these types of situations. So again, I want to thank everyone for listening to this. If you're still with me, my name is Andy Aplikowski. This is the podcast And For Other Things. Don't forget, I am putting links to the items discussed on the website andforotherthings.com. Stay tuned for more episodes, and don't forget to subscribe via the website or iTunes. This is And For Other Things. I'm Andy Aplikowski. Thank you for listening.